It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Valentine's Day can be a landmine if you're not happily coupled up. Our next guest has chronicled the ups and downs of unrequited love and has some ideas for how to bear it.
Samara O'Shea joins us now. She's a writer at the Huffington Post and the author of the new book, Loves Me Not, How to Survive and Thrive in the Face of Unrequited Love. Samara, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much, Veronica.
So when you started telling people about this book, did everyone sort of start coming forward with their stories of unrequited love? I imagine it's sort of a universal theme for people.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of knowing nods was the main response.
Well, you start in the book by saying we should acknowledge our feelings, our unrequited love feelings, that we're entitled to them. Is that as easy as it sounds, or is it more complicated than that?
I think you're absolutely entitled to be romantically interested in someone, and I support that, the notion that you're not out of anyone's league. Don't think that way about yourself. And just because two people don't agree to be together romantically doesn't mean anyone's a bad person. There's a lot of things that need to line up. And as far as unrequited love is concerned, I am all in support of taking risks personally and professionally. So I think it's absolutely okay to let someone know you're interested. But instead of giving up after we do that, a lot of times we sort of go into I'm going to win you over mode. You know, the ego wants what it can't have. And that's where it gets to be dangerous, where you're, you know, on a mission.
So when the object of a crush doesn't return our feelings, how can we take that without, you know, feeling rejected, that there's something wrong with us?
Oh, that's such a good question. and I've sort of mastered feeling the answer. I'll try to explain, not to take things personally, because everybody, we're all walking through the world looking at each other through the lens of our own insecurities and experiences, some good, some bad. So, you know, you might love the color red and the man you're interested in doesn't. And that is such a little thing that has nothing to do with you. And we take that personally and suffer because he's not interested in me. I understand it goes beyond the color red. I'm just trying to give an easy example.
But it's this huge, fraught situation. You're interested in someone. Maybe it's love or a crush or something like that. You put it out there. They're not interested back. How do you make that not be a statement on yourself? I mean, it's more than just not liking similar things.
Yeah, that's true. What we're doing when we're interested in someone and kind of holding out hope that they will like us is we hand over our self-esteem to that person. Like, as soon as he recognizes me, as soon as he gives me the time of day, if he breaks up with his girlfriend for me, then I will be validated. So it's a matter of learning to validate yourself and say, you know what, I'm going to give this a chance, see if someone's interested. He's not interested. That's absolutely disappointing, but it doesn't have to be devastating if you don't give over your self-esteem.
Well, you tell a story in your book that sort of illustrates that, and it's the love life of Edith Wharton, who wrote The Age of Innocence, and her love life is pretty topsy-turvy. You want to tell us about sort of the man she found passion with later in life?
Yes, so Edith Wharton married at a young age, and they were both from very wealthy families, and it got off to a very rocky start, and they were sort of miserable in their marriage for years, and she fell in love maybe about when she was in her mid-40s. And she fell in love with a journalist, and they had a very passionate relationship. But it was she was very interested, and she very much wanted to be with him. And he was the player. And he was with Edith sometimes, and he was with other women. And she eventually cut it off and went on to write a Pulitzer Prize-winning book. So I think that's how she got over it.
That helps.
Success is the best. Success can be the best revenge.
Yes, or the best process. Just the writing process is certainly therapeutic.
Well, on the other side of what I'd presented earlier, taking the person's rejection as a judgment on us, how can we resist the idea that if they don't like us back, there's something inherently wrong with them?
I think that bleeds into the narcissism of you don't want to go around assuming anybody who's not interested in you is worthless. That's the other side of the coin that is equally unhealthy. You just kind of shrug your shoulders. And I know it's not easy, but if you do it a few times, if you practice, just kind of shrug your shoulders and say, nobody's a bad person, not me, not him. And there are things that make you a bad person if he does go out with you and lie to you, and if you get to a certain stage and it's an unhealthy situation. But if it's just an initial interest and you're telling someone you're interested and he's not interested, I think that can kind of be shrugged off.
One thing that it seems like would help if we could sort of process it at the time is that obsession is not the same thing as love. And to try to sort of sift through that and recognize it when we're just kind of freaking out and obsessing, and when there's actually genuine feeling there. Do you have some advice for how to separate the two?
It's difficult at first because infatuation is the initial stage of love and of obsession. And I think something can start out very fun and you have those good feelings, those butterflies, and that's not to be tossed aside. It's a great experience. But yes, if somebody decides they don't want to go any further with you and you are obsessively checking in on them, whether it's obsessive texting or cyber stalking, if you are doing all the work and you're not really getting any response, then it's gone into the obsessive direction.
I love your title on this one, Silence Your Inner Psycho. But I imagine people in this situation don't think, I am now going to become intensely creepy. It sort of creeps up on them. What are the warning signs? You mentioned I'm sending all the texts and not getting them back. Mm-hmm. What are some other warning signs that, hey, maybe it's time, take a time out, step away for a while?
I think you need to try to tell yourself, okay, I'm not going to his Twitter feed. I'm not going to his Facebook page. And I'm sorry I'm saying him. It's the pronoun I'm using that certainly applies to hims and hers. So I just want to make that clear. Try to stop yourself. It's sort of like people who say, I can quit smoking whenever I want. Okay, then quit. Stop. And if you have a very difficult time stopping, then you need to take a step back and really try to control your behavior.
Social media can be complicated because it's so tempting. You can get these peaks inside people's personal lives that can feed your crush or your obsession, but it can sort of be kind of toxic at the same time, can't it?
Absolutely. It feels like you have a sense of control. Oh, I know what he did last night. Oh, I see what these photos look like. And it's an absolutely false sense of control. You have no input or say in someone else's life. And it feels like you're not doing any harm because it's not literal stalking. You're not outside someone's house with binoculars. It's just innocent little computer stalking. Nobody knows you're doing it necessarily, but you're harming yourself. You're making an obsession last longer than it needs to in some cases.
We're getting into the stalking territory, but is there anything inherently wrong with just having crushes? They can be a fun and positive thing, can't they? Even if they never turn into anything.
Yes, I am calling unrequited love when it's distracting you from your daily routine, when you are feeling down, you're feeling bad about yourself because someone's not interested. Again, your self-esteem has been handed over. But a crush, if you've got a crush on a coworker, the guy at Starbucks, that's great. Yeah, absolutely. Smiles and flirting, that's fun.
We're talking with Samara O'Shea. She's a writer at the Huffington Post and the author of the new book, Loves Me Not. We're talking about how to survive unrequited love today in the lead up to Valentine's Day.
And we want to hear from you. How did you survive unrequited love? Do you have advice or stories to share? Well, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking now with Samara O'Shea. She's a writer at the Huffington Post. She's got a new book out, and it's called Loves Me Not. We're talking about how to survive unrequited love today in the lead up to, of course, Valentine's Day.
And we want to hear from you. How have you gotten through unrequited love in your life? Do you remember maybe your first crush probably didn't go anywhere? Maybe give us a call and tell us that story. Do you have advice for people in the situation of experiencing unrequited love? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Samara, we've been there. We've been rejected. Now, how do we overcome that feeling of rejection for the next time to put ourselves out there again someday? Samara, are you there? I think we've lost the connection with our guest, Samara O'Shea. You can call in, though, with your stories of rejection and unrequited love at 800-642-1234. while we hopefully try to reestablish contact with Samira O'Shea, author of the book Loves Me Not. We'll periodically check in to see if she's on the line. Samira, are you there?
Here, can you hear me?
There she is.
Yay.
So okay, sorry about that.
Not a problem. So my question was, how can you psych yourself up to overcome that feeling of rejection, get out there again after you've been rejected once, and you know, not be gun-shy the next time?
I think it's so important to kind of become a master of rejection, because there's always rejection in life, and including, let's say you meet that person, you end up getting married, including in romantic relationships. You're not always going to agree. You're going to reject each other's ideas sometimes. And I think if you can just sort of master rejection in that you accept that it's going to happen sometimes, and you know a life of risk is a worthy one, and just continue to do it, continue to be rejected personally and professionally, and then you kind of get used to it. Some things will work out, some things won't, and you've got a nice little volley going on.
That's a tough sell. I'd like to have mastery over a lot of things. I don't know if rejection is at the top of my list, but I can see that it could have positive effects too. Well, let's get
our
callers.
There's a section in the book called Singing in the Rain of Rejection.
Singing in the Rain of Rejection. That's good. I like it. All right, well, let's go talk to our caller here. Ben is joining us from Lake Geneva. Hey, Ben.
Hey.
Hi, Ben.
Hi. I was just, my thought when I heard this show was, I have met tons of perfect, perfect girls in my life. However, it was well into my 30s when I realized that they weren't perfect for me.
Mm-hmm.
There was no, it didn't matter, you know, what I did, because it wasn't me. But they were still wonderful women. They just needed to find the right mate, and I wasn't it.
Interesting. Thanks a lot, Ben. And that makes me think maybe we should lower the stakes of our crush and our unrequited love. It might seem at the time like this is the one, right? This is the life partner, the soulmate, whatever. But as Ben found, maybe he met lots of not soulmates and he could wait a while.
I've done the same, where I've met someone and thought, oh, he's absolutely perfect. And what has helped me get over that is nobody's perfect. And it's not fair to go into a relationship expecting perfection of somebody. They are inevitably going to let you down. So I think it's just managing of expectations that can be very helpful.
What about the role of friendship when we're talking about unrequited love? Because the temptation is, like you said, you go into narcissist mode, and mm-hmm. it seems like people can talk your ear off about their unhappy love affairs or the love that isn't returned. What's the balance there with friendship?
I think one, we were talking earlier about how to tell if you're in an obsessive situation. And if you're blowing off your friends, that is a good sign. You can use your friends as a gauge. A new relationship is certainly exciting, but not enough to discard your family and friends. So that is one way to tell. And then, of course, if you are in depressed mode of after a breakup or something didn't work out, it is very tempting to talk about yourself and really talk your friend's ear off about the situation. And I say you have a certain amount of time to do that, depending on how long you were with the person. Maybe a week, maybe two, longer, you know, if it was a very long relationship. But you have to be careful with your friends. They're not therapists. They have problems of their own. You can't take up all of their time with your problems.
Talking with Samira O'Shea about her new book, Loves Me Not, talking about unrequited love and how to get through it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Call in with your stories about unrequited love, advice, or maybe a question. And Samira, speaking of friends, you don't just write about romance in your book. You talk about platonic love being unrequited, potential friends who maybe don't want to be friends back. How do we deal with that situation?
It takes a little bit longer to notice. If someone you're romantically interested in isn't calling you back, you notice right away. Your ego is all in it. But sometimes time will go by, weeks, months, and you'll notice the friend isn't giving you the time that you want either. And women especially take this very personally. I don't mean to play the gender card, but I know some of my friends will be very upset if they don't hear back from girlfriends in what they consider to be a reasonable amount of time. So it's a matter, I think with a friend, it's easier to sit down and say, hey, are we okay? You know, I sense you're pulling away. Or it's also important to accept that not all friendships last forever. I think we expect friendships to last longer than a romantic relationship sometimes. And they don't always. Sometimes people outgrow each other. And again, it doesn't mean anything's wrong with anyone. It just we've gone in different directions.
Going back to the romantic side of things again, I mean, do you think there's something sweet about remembering those first crushes? Not everything has to be a big emotional. The only word that's coming to my mind is furball, which is not the right word,
but it's an emotional, fun word.
You know, maybe it can be sort of a sweetness that we remember.
No, I agree. And once over my early unrequited loves and then unrequited loves in my 20s, once I'm over them, I do remember the sweetness and that just have the nice nostalgic feeling. And I certainly remember the lessons that I've learned, but the bitterness melts away, and that's very nice.
How about a situation of unrequited love with someone we're going to be around, somebody in our circle of friends, coworkers, classmates, whatever? How do you socially navigate that situation? You've put yourself out there, been rejected nicely or otherwise. How do you get along?
I think you have to consider that before you make the move. And a lot of times people say stay in silent unrequited love so that they have a you know, strong feelings for a coworker, but, oh, he's married, so I'm never going to tell him. And you can kind of get stuck in that situation. So sometimes it's a matter of sitting down with yourself and asking, am I going to say something? And if the answer is no, he seems happily married, then you kind of have to act as if you were rejected, act as if he did reject you so that you can move on, because you can kind of stay and stare and hope things work out for a little too long. Don't work out for him. Sorry.
Do you think for our own sort of mental health, it's always better to clear the air and say something so it's just sort of out there? Or is it sometimes better to just, you know, let it be, put it on the shelf and deal with it yourself?
For myself, I believe in taking the risk. And putting yourself out there, I think that's I prefer to do that than wonder years later. Well, what would have happened? You know, I don't wonder how anything would have gone. I know, and people are certainly welcome to choose otherwise. They, especially if it's the case of unrequited love with somebody who is in a relationship, you don't want to take that risk.
But that's how you become a master of rejection. You tell people every time.
Exactly, it's true.
Well, some people are massive chickens when it comes to this kind of thing. I'll name names. Me, back when I was still out there. How would you suggest someone get over that chickenhood and put themselves out there and let somebody know they're interested?
I think you have to accept that rejection is an option. Would you agree that that's the fear? The fear of rejection is what keeps you silent or keeps you from saying anything?
Oh, it's been so long. I don't remember. But I've been married for 15 years tomorrow, actually.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
You got married on Valentine's Day?
So this is, yeah, well, I don't want to go there. This is ancient history we're talking about. I don't know.
Okay.
It's just general cowardice, I think.
Okay. So for anyone going through it, presently, maybe try and figure out what the source is. Is it the fear of rejection? Is it low self-esteem, the assumption that, oh, he or she would never be interested in me? And try to find the source of it and maybe work on it from that point before mustering up the courage.
And what about advice that, the best advice? You've written this whole book and you've shared lots of personal anecdotes within the book from your own life, from your friend's life. What are two or three key points that people can carry with them when they're in these situations? Maybe on Valentine's Day, gritting their teeth tomorrow.
Oh, that's a great question. So tomorrow for Valentine's Day, what has helped me get through Valentine's Days as a single is to realize that couples aren't always having a great Valentine's Day. And not for Schadenfreude's sake, but just I have friends who are very happily married who roll their eyes at Valentine's Day. They feel it's more obligatory at this point. So I think the only people who are really having a fabulous time on Valentine's Day are those who are newly dating, because everything's fresh and new and how fun. But their couples aren't kicking their heels up over Valentine's Day either, so that may help the singles get through it. And I've had some fantastic Valentine's Days as a single with girlfriends. I've done some fun things. I've done the radio on Valentine's Day.
So I think the take-home here, unrequited love, not the end of the world. It's something we can look back on with fond memories if we do it right. Is that right?
Yes. Not only not the end of the world, but possibly a a necessary step in a great piece of literature like it was for Edith Wharton, or a fun book as it was for me, or songs, or, I mean, Unrequited Love is such inspiration, ends up being inspiration for a lot of artists. So it might be the thing that turns you into another passion.
Well, Samira, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insight today.
Thank you both. Happy anniversary, Rob.
Thank you. Thanks.
Samira O'Shea is a writer at the Huffington Post. She's the author of the new book, Loves Me Not, How to Survive and Thrive in the Face of Unrequited Love.